I say.
Hey, girls and gays.
Girls and gays in the morning. Do you know where that comes from?
No.
Well, 10 gold stars to any listener that guesses where that's from.
DM Nyack the answer. She'll give you the reward money.
Oh my, I said gold stars.
Welcome back to I Said What I Said,
where we
close the gap between who we are and who we want to be.
And where we are and where we want to be.
I am your host, Mukundwa.
I am your co-host with the most each time. From left to right, from east to west.
Wow.
From low to high, Nyakwezi.
Wow, what an entrance.
I know.
We're two sisters living in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Two besties making it work in the concrete jungle.
Are we besties?
Yeah.
This is, I'll have to revise that, actually. I don't know if you
amazing.
You want? Anyway.
You're definitely my bestie. One of my besties. I have...
No. Last year, I was like, well, you're my best friend. And you're like, okay, well, you're not mine, but I still like...
Did I say that? Did I say it on the podcast? Is there proof?
Not on the podcast. Then, but you told
then
me
then
that.
Then there's no... Then maybe you're remembering wrong.
Today. So, quite a few things. Okay, well, let's start with... Please remember that we are taking tips. If you like this episode, if you like the podcast in general, if you like the... fun and the effort and the laughs and the insightfulness we bring you every week, please do tip us. That money will be rerouted to people who listen to the podcast who need some coin. Thereafter, if at any point that stops, if we start to use the money for the podcast, like we want to get a new logo.
You've never said that before. We want to use the money for the podcast.
Yeah, I'd like to get a new logo.
Yeah.
We will let you know. But for now, it is for girls and gays in need.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, if you want to tip us with a new logo... How about that? Like, if you're an artist and you want to tip us with a new logo?
I wanted to pay someone.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, I mean, if you'd like to, go ahead. I'd like to pay. Paying for things is my new flex.
Do you know what? I think I agree with you. Also, if it's a gift, we can't be like, no, that's shit.
Revision. Revise this, please. We have to actually post the first iteration of our logo where it was someone Indian did it.
Okay, and that's unnecessary.
No, it's totally necessary because they were trying to do us a favor and they gave us green eyes. And I was like, oh, no, like we're black. It's like totally fine. It's fine here.
So
you can just
funny.
Make it. You can just make us look black.
I didn't realize.
And then purple skin as well. I was like, no, we're like just black. Just like try. And I think we still are purple in the logo. It's a Fiverr logo.
You're joking.
No, we are literally purple.
Oh my God, I'm screaming.
I want to talk about... Okay, we're supposed to talk about cults today, but I also want to discuss paying for things is my new flex.
Oh, okay.
And I want to discuss that a little. Or just want to tell people.
That is so inspiring.
We're in lockdown. I just feel like I feel so chatty and I just want to chat about new developments generally.
That's so good.
Let's start by telling everyone what's happening in SA. Like, what are we... Can you tell us what stage we were at with the lockdown?
So, with the lockdown. So, South Africa went through a hard lockdown of 5 weeks in which the economy really almost ground to a halt with only the very essential workers being out there. So, grocery stores, hospitals, and so on. Police, the army, etc. And a lot of people have been very scared about their income and everything. And now, at the end of last week, our president made an announcement about the status of our lockdown changing. And so we're going to have a staged lockdown release.
Oh, like phase out.
Like a phase out. Thank you. A staged phase out. Mm-hmm. So right now, we would consider what we're in as level 5. So this is the hardest lockdown that we can have. And we're going to phase into level 4 and then gradually 3, 2, and 1. So we're still going to be restricted for a while. We don't know how long stage 4 is going to last, for example, but it'll depend on the numbers of new cases, of, you know, how steep the curve is, if it's flattened out and if it's going down.
I found it quite interesting as well. There's this article that was... So this woman posted an article saying, what are all the similarities all the countries who've really buckled down on COVID-19 have in common? All women leaders. And that was a white woman who posted that, a journalist, who ripped it from a black woman, a Francophone black woman, who wrote the same article in French like 3 days before that. But what was interesting about that was it sometimes feels like people think Africa doesn't exist as a continent. And I know it's cute. I understand that a lot of these countries that were named on the list do happen to have female leaders, and that's important. But like, just because our president Cyril Ramaphosa, like, okay, he's not a woman and he's in South Africa, how could that miss the radar? Like, how is that such an inobvious choice? The UN, or was it WHO, one of the two, congratulated him for his response.
Yeah.
So that kind of irritated me. And just, I understood it when I knew it was a white female author, I think Western. But finding out this is a Senegalese woman, I just also wonder how much of the triumphs of African countries reach even like local and just African news.
Yeah.
Because that's so obvious to me. I just can't believe South Africa's not on the map for that.
Mm.
So that was kind of irritating. And I've also seen, it's interesting, I feel like some people have really responded to the lockdown as like a punishment. So there's a lot of resentment about, we can't, in South Africa, alcohol is banned and cigarettes. I never thought about the withdrawal and how dangerous that can be for people, and people can die. Like, I never considered that. So that aside, it's just been really interesting. I think I've also, I have a feeling people in my circle have been going outside, like to barbecues and having gatherings, which is, and people are planning to in level four. And I still think there's a...
Do you know what? It's almost like that. Yeah, it's happening to everyone, but not me. It was like that thing where people just thought, so like when the AIDS pandemic, you know, was on the rise and people thought, or had just been discovered, let's say, and people just thought, yeah, but that's not me.
Oh, like it's just for dark people, it's just for gay people.
Or for gay people, or poor people, or uneducated people, or ugly people, whatever it was, like just not my circle. Sorry. It seems to be like, that's what's happening. Just going back to your punishment thing, there is a winery in South Africa that's thinking of suing the government. Can you believe? Because alcohol is restricted.
I don't think there's a problem. I think suing is legitimate. Like, I think if you can ever get money from the government for where you think you've been wronged, you should do that. I think that's like a valid avenue to try, because like, why not? But I think the sentiment with COVID-19, it didn't have a race. It didn't have, at least in, okay, no, listen, we're not talking about America, but it just didn't have a race or a gender or like any class boundaries. So that's really surprising that people, what you're saying, that people would think it could miss them. But I do think because it's invisible, it's so hard to fight an enemy that you can't see, essentially. And like with it, people do, so many diseases are embodied. And when we think of cancer, people think of women in bandanas. Like it has to be people, we create symbolism around a body, black for HIV and AIDS. It's really interesting. And I think that for whatever reason, that helps, but also like just really damages any efforts made to combat the disease. Interesting. But otherwise, I think I'm also... So the phasing out of the lockdown, I'm low-key... I'm kind of melancholic. Maybe sad is a strong word. I'm kind of melancholic. I kind of wanted it to go on for a little longer.
Oh, wow. You enjoyed being forced not to see your friends.
Well, funny. I think I've become a better friend, or a more... a more present friend.
Yeah.
I've become a present parent in this time.
A present parent.
Yeah, like I'm there now, and I'm not an absent dad anymore.
Well, honey, it's not overnight. Like, we're still going to go through level four, level three. Mm. Maybe in level two you can go to a braai. So don't worry. You're fine.
Yeah. And the reason I think I loved that we were all people of my experience were having the same experience.
Right.
And like, I didn't, there was no FOMO. I just knew exactly that we were all doing the same thing. Finally, I also just didn't feel weird or guilty for like the lifestyle I lead.
Yeah.
Because everyone was doing the same thing. Like, there were some days people would wake up at 11. Sometimes you exercise, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you purge. Or not purge. Sometimes you binge eat. Sometimes you know. So all these things that I was experiencing that I thought, am I still living like a student? Am I a bum? It's like, well, no, well, people of my experience are doing the same thing. And I just felt like, It always felt like when I was at home, everyone was outside having a party.
Right.
And now I just knew that no one was. Like, everyone was doing what I was doing.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah. Which is odd, because I don't want to be at those parties either.
That's very strange. No, it's not. Is it? It's not strange. Actually, I think that's actually quite, that's very typical. And I think it's all part of the comparisonitis pandemic.
What about you? Like, what's been, are you looking forward to the phase out? Are you, where are you? Are you content or you're not?
Yeah, no, I'm hella looking forward to the phase out. I think because I am a person that lived in FOMO, and I just say lived just to emphasize that I refute, no longer for me. But yeah, lived in FOMO and always looked at the outside, and everyone was living a better life than me. Everyone was further along than me. Everyone was doing better things. And also I would like save the good cutlery for when the guests came, you know, that kind of syndrome. Mm. So I would save experiences for later. Like I have a whole bunch of shows lined up. Shame. My friend has been trying to get me to watch RuPaul Drag Race season 11. No, the UK season. And I'm like, oh my God, I know it's going to be so good. I'm saving it for a rainy day. And I still haven't watched it. And I think they've given up on me now. If they're listening to this, I'm really sorry. I failed you yet again.
I'm dead.
But like, that's the kind of like, that was my pattern. And so okay, now being locked up and like everything I have right now and have amassed to now and have built my life to be up to this point is what I have to live with. So like that I put off getting a nice carpet, or I put off, you know, having nice tracksuits or nice clothes. Like I just took, I'll get these cheap ones for now. And then when I have the energy, I'll go out shopping for nice things.
Yeah.
Or there's this money, I could use it for clothes, or I could just be sensible and like hold on to it for a little longer. And now I'm stuck with clothes I don't like, with, you know, no carpet in my lounge because I was waiting to get the perfect one, with, you know, just things that that I didn't need to think so long and agonize about. I could have just done. But I also have some positives, you know, like I have a skipping rope and I have, you know, exercise bands and you know, it's been so good to just have some props to be able to exercise with and dance about with. I have my online business and I just think, thank God, like I just stuck with that. And now it's come in handy when, you know, no one can move outside, when no one can go to professional recording studios. I have one in my bedroom. So there's some things I did very right where I just got on with it. Like, you know, I just have, because I was obsessed with exercise and movement and everything, I just have a gamut of like, you know, things to do. And so I'm not stumped as to how to move my body. Like I'm able to help myself.
That's so funny, because I would have seen that as a con.
What?
I would have berated you. If I knew you had as much workout equipment as you do, that you hadn't, well, the bands you hadn't used before, really.
Not really.
I really would have been like, you need to throw those out immediately.
I know. Actually, and that's why I threw out my pull-up bar, because you were like, you haven't used this literally in 2 years. You haven't touched it. You need to throw it out. And you were right. But now I was like, damn it, if I only had my pull-up bar.
Yeah.
But which goes to show, like, maybe, yeah, I could have had it, but I should have used it. So
do you like the idea? There's this idea, or some people live by, and you'd know more than me because you're very tiny house energy, that you should be able to.
I thought you were going
to
stop at tiny. I was going, yes, honey. I is petite.
Cute. That you should be able to have all your possessions in kind of like two suitcases and literally something you can carry.
Love that.
But then how do you live a life of like hedonism and pleasure and a little bit of exit? Like how? So already a carpet's taking up one suitcase. So am I misunderstanding?
In this rare case, you are not. So No, I think the essentials should be in, I want my essentials to be in one, like one big backpack or one rolly suitcase. Okay. So if I had to drop everything, so I want all the plants, I want the plush things, I want my books, I want the, but if I had to leave tonight, I could put everything that mattered to me in a suitcase and go.
But you can do that now, surely?
Yes, it's just that, yes, I can. It's just that the part of the essentials are things I don't like if I was to pack two pairs of jeans, I really don't like the ones I have. Things like that.
Understood.
Yes.
And that's by no fault of your own, excuse me.
Excuse me? How is that not my fault?
The jean industry is trash. Like, you guys have had how many hundreds of years? Maybe. Levi's, they just don't produce jeans that are incredible and that fit our bodies in the ways that need to be
Wait
fit.
Wait a minute. No, Levi's has, I remember hearing about it years and years ago.
You heard about it. Have you visited the factory store in Woodmead? Because no. I have. And they didn't have my size. And I was like, am I the biggest person in Southern Africa? Am I the biggest in South Africa? Am I the biggest in Woodmead? Even you, who is attending to me, is bigger. So tell me, What's plus about any of this?
But, okay, but question though, like if we shopped a little higher, would we find better things?
More, if you paid a bit of coin.
Yeah,
and
if we paid more money.
Like which brands though?
I've never walked into a Levi's store in my life.
Oh, okay.
Because I just will not spend that. I won't spend, I think what's the equivalent of like $70, $80, $100 on jeans. Never. You'll never find me doing that.
Okay, so I would. And I've never gone into like the actual like Louis Vuitton places because I think they have terrible jeans.
And all...
Yeah. They must do.
There's a point where price doesn't improve anything about the garment, like the quality or whatever.
There is a point. But I think what I'm saying is this: the shopping experience in South Africa, it's better than a lot of countries I've been to in Africa, but there's still a lot to be desired. So in England, I could get my jeans. There are enough of us thick girls, thick people, and a big enough market, and online as well. Like, it's accessible comparatively.
But in England, is it that the white people are... So here I'm thinking they're catering to a European market. I don't know where that market comes from, because you get a lot of white, thick girls here too.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't understand, who are all the skinny people that are buying the jeans? Like, who is this market?
It's there. So
is
I think
the children?
Are you talking about we're talking about England now?
No, South Africa. I don't understand why we don't have a range of sizes.
It doesn't make... Well, okay, look, I think we do, but the way our society is segmented, like the really big woman who's serving me at Jet has jeans.
I see. She's wearing jeans.
She's not getting them from Jet, but where are you getting them from? Are you getting them in town? Because I'm not going there.
Right.
So we don't have an accessible shopping experience. Like you might do a high street in London where if you can afford a bus ticket, you can get there. And so I think the actual structural apartheid or structural dangers and difficulty of access just also affects how we're able to access clothes.
I see.
So yeah, it's intensive. Because I specifically remember when I used to be able to shop at Mr. Price as a size maybe 14 or 16 as a young person.
Yeah.
And then coming back from Geneva 2 years later and that changing. That it was a much more of a straight shape. And I just couldn't get anything for a while. Which was just really interesting.
Strange.
Yeah. But
yeah.
I wanted to ask, actually, I saw a post on Instagram that said, please refrain from flaunting in this time of isolation. If you have wealth, if you have a really pleasant or drippy lifestyle, please don't show it. Like if you have a big ass garden, if you live on an estate, like a mansion, don't show that kind of stuff. That's unfair. And that's like overwhelming people who don't have. What do you think about that request?
That's really weird, because when there is no isolation and you do see all these drippy what things, it's not like you have access to them anyway. Well, are you then more distracted by your 9-to-5 or your, I don't know, your kids screaming or going to, I don't understand. It doesn't make sense to me.
So what they're saying is now we're all more acutely aware of how our spaces are prisons and how they're not up to standard. We wish we had more meterage in our houses. We wish we had a bigger fridge. We wish we had a carpet.
Yeah.
Now, if you've got all these things, please don't say, oh, isolation's so difficult, and take a picture in your bathroom that's bigger than a lot of our houses. They're saying don't do that. Be humble and just like refrain.
Do you know what? I mean, nah, I understand. I understand. Now I understand where they're coming from. But it's like, how low do you have to keep catering? Like, there's always someone that has less than you or the next person. And there's always, you can always be more and more and more and more modest. And it's, I just think, let's just have the open conversations, you know, let, you know, rich bitch Nyack be like, oh my gosh, like this bathroom, I just, you know, this, I'm crammed in this space. I'm in my private bathroom, and let me have a fight with you online about, you know, you don't even have, whatever, like just let it play out. But I just don't think it doesn't serve anyone. I think to pretend that everything's okay. If it's not, if you're not okay with where you live, it's okay to look at that and either become okay with it or change or resolve to change things when you can. But when you can't, maybe it's the challenge is for you to change your perspective. and to stop following that person, like follow other people that don't. But there is a market of people that want to, I want to log on and see beautiful bathrooms because I find it inspiring, because maybe I don't feel so oppressed in my home and I have the mind space to dream of a bigger home that I could have. And so for me, it's inspiring to see that person who has this massive ensuite bathroom that they want to redo and, you know, they're feeling cramped because they can't get out to get the Italian tiles. So I think let people be and take the onus on yourself to filter the channels that you watch.
Mm.
What do you think?
Yeah, I found it such a bizarre, just such a bizarre request. And I think I find a lot of requests for consideration on the internet extremely weird. I just can't, I've never, or at least the sane Mukundwa of like from 2018 onwards, as far as I can remember, I've never asked a stranger on the internet for anything. Like, I've never asked them to consider me. And I think I can't imagine fixing my fingers to ask a stranger to do a little bit less of this and a little bit more of that.
Yeah.
Especially if, unless that was like something they requested, if they asked to know, I just can't believe that's a thing.
Yeah.
And I think it ties into the idea of also trigger warnings for me.
Ah.
About essentially, if you, someone, me needing a space to be a certain way for me to be comfortable.
Yeah.
And assuming that's the lens through which everybody operates.
Correct.
And what happens is it becomes kind of culty in the sense that there's this idea that there's...
Ooh, are you segueing?
Am I segueing? Also, I don't think segue... I mean, it is a... Segue is an interesting word. We're going to discuss it.
Somebody's spiraling.
I know. Just the idea, like how... If you're telling me... If you're saying, please don't flaunt your bathroom, and my bathroom's pink tiled and is 6 by 6 meters squared... Because you have a smaller one and because it makes you uncomfortable because you don't have that kind of wealth and you won't have access and it gives you anxiety. You're assuming that people have that collective experience and assuming that your 2 by 2 meter squared bathroom is somehow the stand, is somehow the lowest it can go. What about somebody who uses a bucket? Yeah. Where does it end where people, where does it end? Where we say, okay, there's a certain amount of wealth you can't flaunt or amount of comfort or privilege or experience you can't because others don't have.
Yeah.
Others continuously don't have. If you think the bar, just when you think people have nothing, there's someone who has even less.
Yeah.
And so for me, it would be so good to rather interrogate why you feel that way. Like, I want to understand the end, the kernel of truth behind all of that. Like the entitlement, the expectation to make a space safe that we don't have in offline.
Mm-hmm.
Like we don't ask of that of our workplaces enough that can you change this? Can you change it? We don't ask of that of many establishments, but somehow online in the space that's so elastic and even more manic than offline, we're expecting us to consider each other, especially when we're strangers. It's unrealistic and strange.
That is very weird. And we don't treat each other as human beings on there. So we'll take someone like Jamila Jamil. And I just think of all the pressure that she's under and maybe puts herself under to like defend everyone and to wear all these, you know, different shields for, you know, everyone out there. And she does one wrong thing and we all come slamming down on her. And maybe this actually also goes for the bulk of celebrities out there that we just hold people up to, or people in the public eye rather, we hold people up to this ridiculous, or we hold people to a ridiculous, unobtainable standard that we would never hold the person sitting next to us to. You know, we expect them, you know, when an athlete gets pregnant, they lose so many followers because now it's going to be baby stuff. But they're human. And when we fall pregnant, we don't just keep talking about accounting like we always have been. Like our life changes and we, you know, then we start talking about our babies, but we expect, you know, the people that we follow online to be these unhuman bots in a sense and to just like and to keep catering to our needs, but they're just people that have decided to share. And yes, we pay them to share, but they are people. And so it is bizarre that then someone would reach out and be like, hey, so I don't like the way you're doing this. Mm. Whereas it should be, I mean, I think the person, again, should take it upon themselves to just like tune their, you know, their signal to someone else, like, or ignore it. Turn the other, like, if you don't like what someone's doing in real life, you look the other way. If you don't interfere, you look the other way. So do that.
Jamila Jamil's an interesting example. She's an interesting example. Yeah, I have some thoughts. I will say that what it's shown is you might as well be your Azealia Banks self.
Mm-hmm.
Because if anything, she's much more loved by the internet than Jamila, who seems to like consistently try and make efforts.
Mm.
And they might be misguided and they might be, you know, all the things, misspelled, misunderstood, because she's learning, but she learns in real time online.
Yeah.
And that benefits her brand, but that also is, I think it's a genuine attempt. And it's so interesting. There's a talk about this. I have to read it, about how the people who, oh, it was a podcast I was listening to where these two white men were slamming cancel culture.
Uh-huh.
And they were essentially, honestly, the nutshell, they were saying, black and brown people and minorities in America, when we liberal white people reach out and we try to do good, you slam us the hardest. And like, we get it even harder than conservatives. Like, the people who actually care and actually want to try and be good people are completely, we're bashed for it when we make a mistake. And I think their message was incomplete and also just like whiny. But I think the kernel of truth there is that sometimes we can be so hard on people who are genuinely trying to understand things. And we get so fed up when people aren't learning at the same paces, as if we don't have things to learn. And so for me, there's so much groupthink on the internet that it's like a place, not that I don't want to be in, but I'm don't want to be in any internet communities.
Right.
Yeah. All my communities are offline, or with friends and people I know, because it's when it becomes a group and a herd, it's impossible for it to not be like bullyish and to be cultish, where there's becomes a group think of what's right to say and what's wrong.
Yeah.
And if you fall out of that, you're like attacked.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. And if we like start to think about cults, because we were here to talk about cults, so much of it, I was trying to understand, well, why do people join cults? Like, what could attract somebody to a cult? And there was a study done where there was a right answer and a wrong answer. So there were two yardsticks. One was clearly shorter than the other. And there were seven men in a room. And you had to answer which yardstick is shorter than the other. And because the experiment was really about one person, but no one knew who that one person, I mean, the one person who it was about didn't know that.
Right.
So the other six people were dummies. And they said, the shorter stick is actually the longer one. And because all of them said that, that person said it too. And what it proved was that 75% of people want to be accepted and part of a group. And they will throw out their logic and their internal guidance system to sooner serve the group because they want to be a part of it.
Right.
And that's what happens with Twitter speak. And that's what happens with Instagram. And things like the Beehive, Beyonce's following, I think that's mostly...
Don't come for us.
Oh, yeah, actually, let me skip by. I think it's mostly just jokes. Like, it's all fun and games, really. You know, I think it's ultimately laughing at themselves. But I just wonder the people who get left, the corpses that are left behind, if they find it that funny. The way they've been dragged and bashed and really bullied.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's all fun and games to them when their head's been superimposed on like a carcass, all these crazy things people do.
Are you serious?
I made that up.
Okay.
I take that back.
Well.
So let's talk about cults. So we've both been listening to the same podcast.
Yes.
I think Leaving Nexium.
Yes.
For 2 weeks. And I've also been listening to this incredible podcast about...
Escaping Nexium.
This incredible podcast about Jeff Epstein. And it's just so fascinating.
Yeah.
Like, in two parts, the kind of person that becomes a cult leader, I can kind of identify. That's not that hard. But the kind of person that enters a cult?
Yeah.
I'm flabbergasted.
Oh my gosh, I'm exactly the opposite.
Oh, oh.
I understand the cult enterer, but the people that start the cults, like...
Really?
Fuck, yeah. Blow my mind.
I can see myself... I can see myself starting a cult.
Oh, oh. This is bad because, and I think I've been a part of one, maybe more cults. So you and I are a bad combo.
Bad combo. Yeah. Okay, well, let's backtrack. So apparently, according to the Netflix Explained documentary, what makes a cult is three things. So a charismatic figure who often is authoritarian and godlike. They position themselves to be either the only carrier of the message or just adjacent to God. And so why question me? Then you need indoctrination, which is mind control, reprocessing or reconfiguring how people think about things. And finally, exploitation, which can be financial, sexual. They didn't mention time, and I want to talk about that. I think a lot of people... I want to talk about time. Let's stop there. And I found a really interesting quote. I'm quoting from the Netflix documentary. This is not my words. That... the biggest joke in religious studies is that cult plus time equals religion.
Bitch, this is what I wanted to ask you now. How is this different from religion? Because you have, take my favorite, Christianity, to bash shame. You've got their, or any of them, you've got a religious leader, someone that came and said, I am the closest to God. Then you've got all these rules of how to be, come closer to God or to achieve perfection. And then, bitch, tithe. Where's your, give us money. Also service. Like, go do all these things in my name, in our name, blah, blah, blah. So, So maybe all the crazy stuff just got weeded out in year like 5, 6, 7, 8. In year 1,700, they were like, okay. Now we think, okay, now we know what works. We'll take all of that crazy shit out. And now it's 2,000 years later. We have a pretty like kosher looking, well, for the, partially kosher looking religion.
Yeah. So the documentary said that one person in the documentary said that, you know, this kind of definition is not vague, but so many things are cults. And they believe that every single prophet could be considered a cult from every single religion.
Yeah.
And then I would further that and say just groups. Like, I really think schools are a kind of cult, like certain schools and schooling systems.
Tell me how a school's a cult.
Well, what I think of, if you just have to have a centralized leader that you all have to respect and stand up to an assembly and do whatever you need to do for them, and then you have a certain way to think, you have a certain set of rules, there's certain things you have to do, and then finally you have... the exploitation, that probably, no.
Well, so you've got to pay to be there, and then you've got to uphold their values, and it feeds into a career path and a capitalist structure that drains you of the best years of your life.
Okay, but that's everything in capital. Like, that's just structures.
But school prepares you for the corporate or for that, for a certain portion of the capitalist structure.
It does. And I think the difference that I would get at with all of this is intention. So I think the intentions were very clear of the cult leaders that I know of for Nexium.
Yeah.
Keith Raniere? Him. His intentions were very... and the guy who founded Jonestown, very specific intentions. Wow. So the Jonestown guy, I haven't...
Oh my gosh, we haven't even given like a summary of what these are. Like, I don't know what Jonestown is, so maybe...
I'll give you a summary, yeah. Okay. People can... So Jonestown was... this is very brief. I haven't looked into this more. But this guy started this cult and said... He was like a faction. He broke off from, I think, the Baptist church.
Mm.
And what I know for sure is that he started a cult and he moved it to one of the islands off the coast of America. And they were hundreds of people there, and he convinced them all to commit mass suicide.
Wow.
And they all killed, most of them killed themselves, who were on the island. And some people weren't on the island that day and didn't. So he studied cult leaders before him. There was a black cult leader in the States. Now, this is all from the Explained Netflix documentary you can go watch. And his message was entwined with civil rights movement. So the intention was very different. He studied him, quite literally asked him, well, how do you keep people following you like a flock of sheep? How is it done? What do you need? What are the tenets of a good cult? And he learned from him and then created his own. So that intention for me is very different to what I would think a religion's intention is, which is, the intention is for the greater good. The impact is different, and depending on what faction of, like, if we're looking at a radicalized faction of religion or these mega churches where people have helicopters, I mean, we can now start to think about intention really, and it becomes a bit more obvious when you look at the subsects, like the subsects of subsects of religions, or when people like tweak them a little bit. There's one in the UK that's a scam. Actually, I won't name the name, but you can just Google Black Church, London Black Church scam, biggest church in London. And this man is literally a scam artist. He's Nigerian.
Mukunda, for someone that is trying to hold back as much detail as possible, you're just like, this is how the stereotype is accurate.
Well, no, I didn't say it, but he's Nigerian. So what are we to do? Like, if he's Nigerian, did I tell him? Did I tell him to study? Did I tell you? Did I tell him? So he's Nigerian. Why is that important? Anyway.
Exactly. Oh, no,
it's important because you need to Google this. So literally just Google it. This guy is a millionaire. He has businesses, loads of businesses that he funnels his money. God knows where he gets his money from.
You hate us rich ones. You.
He would recruit boys from the street, like boys who kind of seem like lost boys who are going to get into gangs. He has this living quarters where you're allowed to live, and he kind of supports you.
Oh, gee.
And then you create music under his music label. It was ridiculous. And you get none of the money. Like, it's all the royalties assigned to him. It's insane. There's a documentary about this. Will I link it? I think you can Google this. I'll see if I want to link it. But that's the kind of thing that's happening. And I went to this church.
I knew it.
This man on Twitter promised £2,000 to a good business idea if you come to church. And I had a business at the time, and I was like, me and my business partner were like, bitch, we put on our Sunday best. I put on my little trotters. I had these, I had a little bit of a heel. I went in. Of course, everyone's looking like baddies. People are snatched in there, which was very surprising. I was like, okay, this is how church is done.
Why is that surprising? It's a black people.
No, snatched. People were dressed in their incredible, like, kente. Breast. Ass.
Okay.
Like, just looking good. Like, people were there to find husbands and wives, and that was good for them. Like, good. I hear a lot of hookups happen in church. Good for them. We were there for 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour, 4 hour.
4 hour?
4 hours praising and worship. It was exhausting. And then, and you know, stand up, sit down. Feet. Stand up, sit down. Oh my God. Another story. Then at the end, we had to all, like, queue up to go into this, like, chamber to pitch our idea. And it was just, there were all these, like, Then people had these booths. I think they had to pay for booths to... it was just too much.
Booths to share your idea.
Yeah. And there were all these Lamborghinis. So you couldn't enter the church before passing the cars because, it's a car park. Lamborghinis, Ferrari.
In England.
Michelin, whatever. Michael McLaren.
Michelin is very
all these low tampon-shaped cars, G-Wagons, everything. And I'm like, okay. This is curious. And so...
But that is because you believe that people that deal in spirituality shouldn't have any money.
No, at the time I didn't think that. And I never put it all together until I watched a literal documentary about how this guy takes these young boys. One of the guys who escaped or who left this group talked about it, about how it was exploitative.
Yeah.
And like he'd use them to make money. And they'd have to recruit people. There were these ways... They all became like hands in his business and they wouldn't get paid a salary. They would get paid in you get a home to live in and food. You're a lost boy. And so all that to say is that I think the intentions of religion are pure, but I think there's a great business model in religion.
Yeah.
Multi-level marketing and Ponzi schemes make a lot of money. And the founder of Nexium studied Amway, multi-level marketing. And so he used, it made so much... while you were in this cult, think of it like Christianity, right? You pay for the Bible, but otherwise it's free to learn. Not in Nexium, right? You had these courses of how to self-develop and you had to pay thousands of dollars and go into debt to learn, even if you're a member of the cult.
So basically what Nexium, the point of Nexium, it's a self-help cult.
That disgusted me the most. You know what shook me to the core? Is that like the premise of Nexium was you are the master of your own ship and your circumstances, you are responsible for your circumstances. You have a hand to play, which there's more than a grain of truth in that for me and my belief system. That's how I operate. But also with knowing that like there's so much I can't understand and like there's so many of my circumstances are affected by so much I just don't have the presence of mind to know about.
Yeah.
And I'm accountable for how I respond, but not responsible for, but not responsible or to blame. And I think that's what they weren't clear about. Or that's what they just, they didn't have that.
No, they were very clear about that. Mm-hmm. And that was your fault. So if bad things happen to you, it was because you are lesser somehow.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. And then what's worrying about all that is it sounds just like the Deepak and the Oprah, because I got this all from Deepak and Oprah and all these people, that they took something that makes a lot of sense and that can be empowering, that you, how you respond is everything.
Mm.
And they made it into a cult where they branded women, had sex with women, exploited people financially and exploited their time. How does that happen?
Mm.
And it's like, I started to look at my own belief system and think, what are the ways in which I'm susceptible to being wooed by absolute nonsense? Mm. Because this all sounds good on paper. Had I not heard about Nexium first, I would have definitely gone to a certain... If they said, do you want to change your life today? Do you want to be accountable and really take responsibility for your life? I'd say, hell yes. That's my brand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And then with really good marketing, like what is $3,000 for a better life? Like, can you even compare that?
They said that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a lot of money, but, you know, if your entire life can be turned around, what is the value of that?
Dude, oh my gosh, this is even giving me flashbacks. So I used to have a boss who was a boss, like was a millionaire, had a business that I worked in.
Oh my gosh.
But then also is a spiritual healer. And they would say things like, yeah, like if you'd complain and say, this is not a direct example, but this was the same gist. You know, I'm not happy with how management's treating me, this workload's too much, this is an impossible target. They'd say things like, is it impossible or have you made it impossible because you've decided you can't achieve it? Why don't you change your reaction and your response to how you're being treated rather than complain and make it other people's problem? How are you responsible for your circumstances that you're here in the first place? You've done all this. So how can you take your power back and just work harder through the problem rather than changing the problem?
Wow.
And I never saw how that was manipulative because that's my spirit. That is so adjacent to the spiritual belief systems I've gotten from the greats.
Mm.
And Oprah and Deepak are in our logo, our podcast.
That's so
order.
True.
Isn't that terrifying?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I mean... And I think cults are like black holes. Like by the time you realize, I just wonder at what point you even realize you're in one.
And I look, that number one, that is true. But also I think it's a black hole for both. So I don't think that, I hope, that the leader of Nexium started out thinking, how can I first woo people in with the idea of self-development, then overcharge them for something they can do on their own, then prey on the insecurities of particularly women so that I can brand them to claim them as my own and have coerced sex with them and keep them needing me and my approval. Like, I don't think he started out that way. I just think it was one thing and then the next thing and then the next thing. And then, you know, it just grew like that. And before you know it, he's created all these ridiculous rules and then another rule to support that rule, then to build on that rule, and in the end is taking advantage of all these people. Having said all of that, I don't think that he was just an innocent man. I think he was definitely had definitely an evil person that would take advantage of people, especially having non-consensual sex or coerced sex, and also with minors. Like, that's not something you just stumble into. Yeah, he did. With underage. As I was speaking, I remembered, wait a minute, this nigga, like, he literally had sex with underage girls, which is rape. Yeah, and you don't just stumble on that. So, but, you know, I mean, even that, yeah, so besides that, like, all the other exploitative things about, you know, like, taking people's money and charging exorbitant amounts and making ridiculous rules and tying people into, like, taking people's homes and their wealth and all of these things, their livelihoods, ruining their lives, I hope one doesn't set out with that as an end goal. I just think it snowballs.
I hear what you mean.
Okay, but do you think... do you think you could actually start a cult?
Yeah. I think in many ways, I feel like I...
So does anyone have an extra room that I can rent? I'll pay anything, really.
Single 34, 30 whatever year old looking for room.
Yeah, cute.
Can cook clean.
Daddy.
Oh my gosh. I'm seeing actually a lot of parallels. I think...
this is so scary.
Well...
what would your cult be?
As a child, okay, we'll talk about children because I think children have many cults. All of, like, all of them. I want to... so I'm going to tie this all in. Okay, well, first of all, with Keith, he... it was intentional. So from his histories, what happened was at 7 years old, he took an IQ test and he was above average. And his parents said... his parents told somebody who told the podcast that... when he realized he was above average intelligence, it was like a switch flipped and he became very messiah-like and carried himself like a god and expected people to treat him that way at 7 years old. At 13 years old, his mother caught him on the phone to multiple women telling them the same thing, that they were all special and he loved them. Multiple. And a bit little later, when he was in his 20s, he was caught sneaking into a teenager's room. Excuse me, like a 16-year-old. And when the parents caught him, they asked, you know, it was back in the day when, like, you just, if you're going to have sex, you're going to marry. And he convinced them that he had really serious plans for her, only to find out he had multiple girlfriends at the time. And the girl was distraught, you know, it was shitty. But that's the pattern. Then he went and he worked for Amway, he studied Amway, and he told people he went to university with that he wanted to start, he figured out that multi-level marketing and self-help were great avenues to make money. And he wanted to make money. And so he built, so somebody who is a megalomaniac, who thinks they're above average intelligence, somebody who loves to confuse and manipulate women, and somebody who wants to make money, became who we were. Like, that's... those are the accumulation of that, right? Was Nexium.
I don't know how I missed all of that.
Oh, you might have missed an episode, perhaps. Or you were doing, you know, you were doing something.
Yeah, I was doing something because everything flashed. As you spoke about that, I was like, wow. And I gave him the benefit of the doubt after they told me that he had very clear intentions to ruin people's lives.
But what you're saying, and it's what you're saying, though, about the intention snowballs, I understand that. Like, there are many times I used to be... I'm less controlling now, but I do still have...
wait, this is the good...
this is the good version of me, I know. Yeah, you've got the good. You've got the tail end, the good end. I was a really controlling child because I think... because I just felt controlled. Like, that was the environment I felt I grew up in. Very controlling. Like, kids had to... my friends had to play the games I wanted. I really thought, and I'd mimic actually just what I saw in the home. This is exactly typical. Like, what I thought made sense was it. And, like, that was the truth. And I believed I was really smart. And I believed I was, but I believed I was really smart. Right. And that people should listen to me. And, like, the things I remember wanting to take, I was a kid. I was, like, 13 and I was losing weight, but I was trying to lose weight. So I was eating like half portions and not dessert. And I was losing weight. And I'd do this every time there was a party where I'd have to fit into a dress. And there was a girl also wanted to lose weight. And I try to take her under my wing to be like, you need to eat. And oh, I remember once at a table, I said, don't eat. I said, are you really going to eat that? About the dessert she's going to have. And people were like, what the hell are you doing? Like, how can you tell her that? Like, she can eat what she wants. That's so weird. And that's like, that's all I remember. And that, but the fact that like, I just that behavior of really positioning myself as like a guru, that I knew what I was doing, that I was trying to really impart this knowledge onto somebody. I can see, and these were good intentions. I really was like, I know how to do this. You said you wanted to lose weight, that you have to stick to it. Like, this is what you have to do. You have to not eat the dessert. And so I can see how that character, my character then, I was checked eventually. Yeah. By my own doing. Like, I had these confession sessions and people really dragged me and told me, no, you didn't know about yourself. Like, some of your behavior is completely off. And then I moved schools in any case. But like that kind of behavior over time, just like peppered around my childhood, and I didn't see anything really wrong with that. I was just a confident, loud kid, friendly, funny. And I think no one else would probably even have these memories, or it would just seem so small. I can see how that child could turn into a cult leader. If that's reinforced over and over again, if I wasn't checked at that table, if more people wanted to learn how to lose weight, if you have a big enough crowd who are in need,
yeah,
it's that simple. And so from what was a good intention of like just feeding off being needed and wanted, and now if people are leaving, I flip the script. It's now not about helping people. It's about how can I protect my position?
Right.
And I think that's what happens with presidents who like are freedom fighters. And then suddenly It's not about that anymore. It's like, no, I think I know the way. And if you don't believe me, I'm just kind of going to make you a political prisoner.
Yeah.
I'm just going to kind of rig the elections. And so I can see it's such a slow burn, and the high of being wanted and needed and loved must be humongous. Like, it must be humongous. I wouldn't know it. But yeah.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow. That was... That's quite a link to have made. And I... Jeez. First of all, like, I'm just...
Shaking.
I'm shaking, actually. Like... But I'm just sending you a lot of compassion and everything. That's horrible to have, I think, gone through. And then to have...
Which part? Me having followers or me?
No, leading up to where you, how you form those patterns, or, you know, that mindset that this is the way it should be and that things could be that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then going through that and like imposing that on other people. Like, it's traumatic for both of you or for everyone involved in the end.
I don't even think it is, hey? I mean, no, it could be. It depends. I don't know about this other person. I don't know, you know?
Oh,
but okay. I think what I'm discussing is, I think all children have cults. I think when you think of the popular girl.
Yes, here I am.
I know. When you think of the popular girl, you had to, and the group they were in, you had to do something to get into that group.
Group was different. Mine was the one that took everyone. I don't think you had
a group.
I literally had a group. People would come to me. I've told this story before.
I know, but can we get some people in to discuss this?
Oh, I wish I could remember their names.
But you're not inspiring in that. Your inspiration, yours is very pure. And yes. Like, of course it was going to be democratic and everyone can have a seat at the table if you're nice. Like, if you're nice and you're like, that's, you know, you like sport, that's your energy. Okay. So that's, you're a benevolent.
God.
Oh. Careful, lightning bolts.
I know.
But I think, when there's a cool crowd in school, especially when you're much younger, for me, like under 14, you have to do something. You have to have the cool phone or the watch, or you have to be pretty, or you have to straighten your hair, you have to have a GHD straightener. Like, I remember the stuff. Fuck. Or you had to just do something. Like, you literally had to, like, it was fun. It was all sport, really. It wasn't intended to be malicious, but you had to do something to get in. There's one person at the top. And then... there is a little bit of exploitation. People want to be the best friend. Like, the in friendship circles when you're young, everyone wants to be the best friend of the person in the center. There was someone that everyone loved. And you played each other off. You'd play off on each other. And, like, you might spread gossip, you might spread lies. So there was exploitation. So I think children, particularly girls, from what I understand from our development, like, how we bully is different. Apparently men... there's this thing where men bully outwards. So boys bully outwards. They inflict harm on others, whereas girls bully inwards. They inflict harm on themselves. and on like micro communities. So they'll spread gossip, whereas boys will torment and beat,
yeah,
and like be quite physically violent. That's when, yeah, they're in the self-destructive phase. But I just think that's so relatable. I think if you really think about the times that there were cliques,
yeah,
cliques are cults. Like we all did this, we all did it or tried or wanted to be in the center, and people who were at the center had this godlike presence. I think it's the desire to be in and to be wanted.
Mm.
Yeah, I just think it's so common. I don't know when we snap out of it or if we all do. I don't know. I certainly did.
You snapped out of it.
Oh, I just mean now I don't have that hankering to be liked by any one person. Like I really am okay with how much my friends like me or don't. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not. And I also don't have a friendship group as such where the... Don't you remember in high school or when you were much younger, the person that everyone liked kept changing best friends? They would like have a rotation? Were you aware?
No. I was aware of different friendship groups, but they were quite stable.
Oh, interesting.
Like, those were the baddie girls. And okay. That was the same from form two to form six.
Yeah. But in the baddie girls, there'd be five girls. The main baddie would change, like... They would have a rotation of friends depending on how you displeased them or how you fell out.
Well, it would be, I mean, there were two that were like, they were the inseparables and they would govern the group. So
imagine that. That's, guys, cults. This is crazy. Children are mad. Like, I think childhood is so much fun, but also just so lonely and terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, you have no language to explain how that feels to be kicked out of a group. How do you even explain that to your parent, like to your teachers, to your parent? Yeah. It is so terrifying, but also just so much fun.
Yo, this conversation has depressed me, man.
Really? And yeah, I'm just like, so alive.
I know. I'm just thinking, well, now I'm never having children. I would never want to put anyone through that. And it's horrifying and horrific. And I mean, although like I managed to escape it in my childhood and I was very conscious of not belonging to any one group. I think that's why I didn't realize I was leading a group because I just... you know, until much later.
Mm.
But even in high school, like I just bounced from as many groups, between as many groups as I could. Mm. But overall was this need to be liked, which also sucked. So in the end, I was pretty much alone. I felt quite alone because I didn't really belong to anyone.
Mm.
That kind of... So I don't know. So I guess I played into the larger, like into the system. Like I was part of that cult, I guess.
What
like,
do you mean?
I really believed in the system, the school system, the rules, the way things needed to be. That was over everything.
That's interesting. I think, I don't think this is how it's divided, but I would say you have more, you'd be a really good follower. I'd want you in my cult. Like when you believe in something, you are really in it.
Do you know what though? And that's such a huge weakness of mine. And that's why religion has been so hard for me all my life because, mm-hmm. and groups and different things. And that's why I hate marketing is because I know my energy. I know my likability and I know how I relate to people and attract people. Mm-hmm. And I hate for that. I've seen that being used. Like I've been in two, three multi-level marketing things and each time it's been, no, this is different. Yes, this is the structure, but this is why it's going to change lives. And I've really believed and then tried to share that with people. And then the first person I share it with, they're like, but that's 10,000 Rand. Like, are you mad? And I've realized, oh, right. Okay. This is a bit crazy. But like, I've been in so many different things where I've seen, even religions, like, and the first meeting we were at, like one of the administrative leaders, like came to me and was like, hey, you know, there's this, the organizing committee, like they could really use another person. The first meeting and like my enthusiasm, like that's what he saw and was like, let's recruit this one. Do you know what? So I'm hyper aware of that being exploited for my character.
Yeah.
And so I guess maybe I resent that as well. Like that's just how I naturally am. And so, yeah, it makes me very sad, but it also shuts me back from away from people. Like I'm so wary of interacting with people because, you know, because of the way I interact with people, I think it also gives them the wrong impression about either how I feel about them or the nature of our friendship, and I don't know how to tell someone, oh, no, we're not as close as you think we are.
Uh-huh.
I'm just really interested in you right now. And when we meet, I am here with you and I want to know and I want to help and I want to be there. We're not, you know, but that's it. And it's okay with me. Yeah.
But I don't think that's something to resent in yourself. That's something to resent of others about, or not even resent. Yeah, people would want to manipulate or take advantage of your light. Your kind of conversion ability. You're able to convert energy, like take something and convert it. Like you could sell me anything, like anything that's going to change my life, I'd believe you. Like your energy, you can really convert a message really well, or whatever you're passionate about and love, the energy. If you lock eyes with someone, you can really, you can do the things. But I think, yeah, some people will try exploit that, and other people, if you really believe in what you're promoting and you see somebody you can do the same and you see that light in them, I think it's a natural inclination too. Like, I don't think it's always manipulative. I think it can be also from a good space. It makes a lot of sense to me.
I think it's manipulative.
How?
So in this context, like in a religious setting, you know, this administrative person doesn't even know me but immediately sees how I can help further their cause.
And that you'd probably enjoy it. I mean, you seemed enthusiastic. It's an offering. It was just, you know, could it not have been seen as...
I think because I'm on the receiving end of a lot of that, I'm resentful of that. I am, where people are like, no, you can do. I'm like, well, how about you just let me first figure out what the fuck this shit is first and like let my life improve and let it actually bear fruit in my life and let me decide if I want to help you spread to all corners of the earth and change the world and bring peace on earth.
That's horrific. That's really not nice to have to pretend. Or that's sorry about that. That, you know, you have to be like just aware that people might want to like exploit your light and exploit your enthusiasm.
Or just latch on.
Latching on is not as hard. I feel like that's more parity. Like, that's more on an equal level. But when it comes from a religious group, that's...
Somehow I find it easier to knock down the religious group stuff. But when it's person to person, I feel like now I'm robbing someone of joy. Maybe that sounds a bit pompous, but it's like if someone thinks that they could be my friend and I'm like, no, it's not never nice to be like, no, we're not friends. Like, you're not the one to be. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So I think I have to work on that and be at peace with that. And maybe it's not as big as I think it is. Like, so many things are in my head as well. Like, maybe it's not that deep and maybe they don't even feel that way. Maybe they're also just friendly and I'm like, oh my God, they're in love with me now.
See, I have three Gemini friends like you.
So we are friends, because before...
I said we're friends, I didn't say we're besties. You're one of my... Okay, yeah. No, one of my...
But actually, we re-evaluated this and we don't do the bestie thing anymore.
Do we not?
Oh God.
We're not compatible. We should really touch on that before we end this episode.
Oh yeah, we should. I really thought we should. We should actually tell our listeners.
That we're not compatible.
Yeah, we've discovered something big. Okay, let's finish. Let's stick to one train of thought.
I know. This is a great episode.
I know.
Tip us, by the way. This is a really good episode. This is probably my favorite. So please tip. Seriously.
That was the gap for your coins to hit the...
Tip. To hit the casket? What is it? Not the casket.
The floor of the pee bank.
You know when you're in church and like you're giving money and there's a lull in the song?
Yeah.
When they're passing the basket and you drop your coins and they go... and you're like, fuck, man. Like...
Everyone, paper, I'm sorry.
I know, everyone else is like putting on these rolled up notes and yours is clang. I can't stand it.
And it's a heavy clang, so they know, oh, that was just R5.
And I also asked my mom, I asked somebody, I was like, can I get change from the bar? Like,
literally.
Can I put in my R20 and take out 15?
Literally, I've wanted to so many times.
Take out change.
Yes, I only want to give R10. And all I have is a R50 note. I'm not giving 50, 100 rand to the church. No,
the servers are watching you.
I don't even go here. I'm just visiting.
I don't even go here. I know. And then like, there was a time where our parents would always, or whoever with the auntie, would always give us money to put in. And now we're of age where they don't. Like,
I know.
They just are like, you better pull out your pocketbook.
I remember, you know, the first time that happened, like looking across the aisle and my...
Your mum.
Her hand stayed on her lap. I said, Mom, what about me?
Yeah, you have to pull out your own coin.
Damn.
Picked. That's actually a really specific, that's a marker of getting older when like your parents do not give you money. To, you need to put your own.
I remember the first time my dad didn't reach for his wallet at coffee. And I was like, okay, Dad, literally, can you still pay for this one?
Just looking
I'll
at
tell you.
You
when I can pay. I'm
shaking.
Yo.
Oh, good times. So back to Gemini discussion. I just do feel like there are people who are really likable and some people enjoy that and they like having loads of friends and like it's whatever and they it works. Mm. They're likable and they like being liked and they're happy to be friends with people. But I think if that doesn't match up, that is work I guess you have to do. Mm. In some form or another, either by just not following up or by communicating. But yeah, it is your portion. Your superpower is being likable, but there always is a, you know, not a consequence and a fallout of that too.
Right, right, right.
But it's your superpower.
Yeah, I think really I have to learn how to be an acquaintance.
I'd make loads of money if I were you. If I was as likable as you, I'd have capitalized entirely.
What are you even talking about?
I'm literally talking about what I'm talking about. I said what I said and I meant what I said. What do you mean how? I'd just have friends in high places. I would have loads of acquaintances who I'd just ask
for money.
I've just come out of a job working with a certain demographic who are very self-promotey and pushy and really good at marketing. And so, but very culturally different. And so I'm really comfortable at the moment with like being, with just asking for things in a way that I was so embarrassed to before. So with this, I am me, but stronger now. Like I'm a fusion of Mukundwa plus like an aggressive marketer. I would never, before working with them, I would have never asked people to contribute, to tip me for the podcast. I would have been so just, not embarrassed. What's the word? Maybe embarrassed.
Ashamed.
She's like, oh my God, I can't believe that's so embarrassing. How can I ask people? No. And I'm like, you need, please, you like the service,
you like
pay.
It, tip. And that, I think have you noticed I haven't asked?
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, because you're still normal. You're still pre. You need to go work for these people.
Okay. I wouldn't last a week.
Cultures who promote.
Self-promote.
Who self-promote is very interesting. But yeah, I understand that. So I think you would be, if I wanted a follower anyways, I would pick you. I don't think
that's
be
not
a, good...
a compliment. I like,
Oh, okay. Should I take her back?
Yeah.
But that, okay, I take her back. Do you forgive me?
Yes.
Let's go back to, so to actually revert back to compatibility.
Oh, yeah.
That was
yeah.
a really interesting realization we had.
It was great.
So I really thought, and I think I've been saying it a lot on the podcast, like, it just takes work. Like, to have a friendship where, if you, or a relationship where you have the best of times, you need to have the worst of times. And I really thought that was true because of me and Yak. Like, the highs are so high and the lows are equally low.
Mm.
But Nyak brought it to my attention that there's something called compatibility.
Yeah, I don't know why it didn't occur to me before, but you know, as we were sitting in the car yesterday, I was like, no, that people are compatible. Like, I have a friend who I could just live with, no hassles, like, and I have lived with, you know, for a length of time, no hassles, we're fine, we compromise in the same ways, we speak the same language, we like the same music, our spirituality is in the same direction, like, we're just you know, there's not much to, there's not much, there are not many friction points. Whereas you and me are very different. We have so many, all of those categories I mentioned.
Everything's different.
Are different. Even, you know, our standards about so many things. And maybe that's why it makes for a good podcast as well. Because we have all these opposing ideas. But not to say that the other way wouldn't work. It would just be an echo chamber and we just bring a lot of yes.
That is so funny because I think we... I think we think the same things.
For a lot of the part we do, but I think a lot it we
diverges.
Don't.
Diverges, yeah. I think we get to the same point, but really different pathways.
Exactly. Yeah. Oftentimes we'll have an argument like we did today in the kitchen, and we were saying the exact same thing, just from the opposite ends.
What was the argument? We had an argument?
I don't remember what it was.
Interesting. Yeah. So I didn't realize. So when if I think about our relationship, I put us at 60% compatibility.
Yeah.
Which
is very low for someone that thought we were compatible.
I didn't think we were compatible. I just thought this is how relationships are, that you have to disagree and work through every single thing as much as we do.
Yeah.
And when I thought about my friendships, like all of the ones who I talk, like I keep close to my heart or who I'm always in contact with, I have nearly no tension or friction. Like I There's just nothing that we argue about, which is interesting.
It is interesting, but also it's different because before you and I lived together, where was the friction?
That's very true. It's so different when you have to use the same toilet, when you have to flush the same period and poo down the same toilet. You have to use the same sink to throw down oil
and bacon fat
and two cloths. So it's all the same. Like we had to, a trail of ants was, no, oh my God. No, I don't even, we can spoil ourselves. Anyways, we had to clean up bugs. And we had to divvy up that work.
Our cat killed a bird in our garden, which was lovely.
Yeah.
And there were feathers everywhere, and that's fine. And Mukunda was like, don't worry, I'll sweep the feathers. She swept the feathers, but then she was like, but where's the bird? We didn't know.
Day one, day two, day three.
Day four. Nyak is, I don't know why I was poking my head in the back of the garden. What do I see? A carcass with ribs sticking out of the feathers.
Now we have to decide who's picking up the carcass, who's bleaching the spot. So if I was in that position with all my best friends, there would be much more. I mean, I have lived-ish and done business with a best friend, and that was a lot of tension. But through that, our relationship grew so much. Mm. I would not love them as much and respect them, and I just wouldn't appreciate them. Oh my gosh, yeah. I just would not hold them the way I hold them now without having had such a hard time with them and being so unhappy with us.
Mm.
And so it's like, But yeah, compatibility is a thing. I'm really looking forward to a romance. I also found my king. His name is Sam Hargrave.
Is he a Viking? You can Google him.
No, well, he looks like a Viking.
Uh-huh.
By the way, when I say white king, I mean Viking. Difference.
It's the accent.
Yeah.
Viking.
So, no, I found him. You can Google him.
Did you get my joke?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It sounds like you're saying white king, but you're actually saying Viking. Get it?
People who explain jokes. Aren't you a shit? Like, this is just that a, would humiliate this is
a
me.
A low grade crowd. So I know you people out there in podcast.
You're like the Joker where he's on stage laughing at all. Did you watch the Joker?
No. It's too scary. No,
it's not scary at all.
Oh, okay.
It's fantastic. Oh, I just want to chat. How many more minutes do we have? I mean, are you okay?
I need a pee.
Okay, go pee.
And isn't the Joker the one where he slit his face so that he could have a bigger smile?
Yeah, that's the old movie.
And you're telling me that that's
this
the old
movie,
movie
is not bad. He just like, worst case, I think he decapitates someone with a fridge. Literally, only thing.
Okay, they that's why I haven't watched it. Because the last Joker was horrendous.
Okay. Do you want to go wee and I'll just keep chatting to everyone? I'm just in such a chatty mood. Okay, so.
Good luck, guys.
So
good luck, gays and girls, because guys, we don't believe in.
Yeah, his name is Sam Hargrave, and he is a stunt. He started off as a stunt. He's a stuntman, a stunt coordinator, and now a director. And he's directed his first feature film, I believe, and it is called Extraction. It is on Netflix, and you have to go watch it. I think there's a lot of discussion around, I don't know what they've called it. Maybe it's even called yellow facing. Basically, when movies put a yellow filter on any like hot, bustling city to denote like now in a brown or black country, it's a little more ghetto, it's a little more hot and sticky. And they did that a lot in the film. Now, I don't agree with that, but that's for another day. I think I'm fine with the filter. So he directed a film with Chris Hemsworth. It's fantastic. You have to watch the action sequences because he's a stunt coordinator, like trained. The action is so... It is just so poetic and so, it feels so off cuff and scruffy and scrappy. Like I love scrappy close quarters action. So when like films have some Krav Maga, it's beautiful. And so there's a lot of shooting close range, meaning like shooting somebody who's 30 centimeters away from your gun, contortion, innovation. I think he kills someone with a mug, like blunt force trauma. It is so beautiful. And this guy choreographed it, Sam. And Sam has the kindest eyes. He kind of looks like, I compare people to animals in the nicest way. He has this like billy goat energy because he has this big beard and these beautiful, kind eyes. He just seems like a kind person. And from what I see, he's not dating anybody. He just seems like such a kind soul. And also it's just such a genius for being able to direct a film that's for a first feature film. It is fantastic for a first. Storyline, yeah, it's an action, guys. Like, what can we expect? But the the actual sequencing is just stellar. Like, he clearly pushed the boundaries of action with that film. It is fantastic. So go watch that. Yeah, Nyack. Nyack's done weeing.
Don't tell the people about my bowel movements.
But you're urinary. Yeah. So I think that's...
Have you given all the spoilers?
I haven't said any spoilers. It's a beautiful film.
Good.
Yeah.
I don't know if I believe you.
No, it's great.
But I'll watch it for Chris.
I'll watch it again.
Oh.
I mean, that's really all for me.
Yeah.
You did all this work on cults. Did you get any of it out?
This girl. We had planned to have a cult episode. And then just before we start, she's like, yeah, but I also want to chit-chat about friendship. And I nearly decapitated her. Yeah,
got so many notes.
I have so many questions.
Well, we can still do it in like a next episode. It's never over.
Let me run through all my questions.
Yeah, you can. You're more than welcome.
So what type of cult could grab your attention?
Self-help. Absolutely.
Oh my God. What are your cult red flags?
My red flags. I think asking me to promote or to spread the word, asking for my time, an amount of time. So if I'm going, suddenly I'm going every Saturday, or suddenly I'm going more than I want to, I don't like feeling time starved. And that's what happened with one of the religious, I have a lot of spiritual practices that I've taken from spiritualities or religions, but I also just manage how much interaction I have with those groups, because I'm not there for the group. I'm really there for like the manifesting power of that religion. So when I realized I was just every Saturday was dedicated, I slowed down. Like, I need a Saturday to also just play with my pussy and like to just watch shows. Yeah. I eat burgers for breakfast. And I can't do that if I'm in whatever religious group's churches every single Saturday.
Right, right, right.
So yeah. Mm-mm.
And do any of these red flags apply to other areas of your life? Like work?
No. I have very little boundary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when to like just stop. So I might want to look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then would you and how would you extract a loved one from a cult?
My God.
Would you, first of all?
Okay. Well, let's discuss religions. Well, look, I think cults, I don't have a problem with cults. I have a problem when it stops being, when it starts being destructive for the person personally.
Yeah.
So.
Oh.
Yeah.
So if... Okay, so Nyack is in a cult,
mm-hmm.
and she is paying 7,000 rand a month to take different courses, to do different activities.
Mm-hmm.
She's spending all her Saturdays, but bitch is happy. Mm-hmm. Like, she's enjoying, she likes the friends she's made. Some of the doctrines are a bit, like, kooky, but she's really happy and she's thriving. You know, she's, yeah.
Yeah. Then it's none of my business, hey?
Even though her social circle is also kooky and they're all, you know, spewing all this crazy shit.
As long as it's not harming you. So if you feel it's not harming you, there's kind of objective harm as well. So if you haven't identified exploitation, and if I can't identify exploitation, then I wouldn't step in. And from all that, I'm not identifying exploitation. It is a bit weird that you have to pay, but you've decided you want to, and the courses help you. I pay for memberships for things. So, I mean, go ahead. Mm-hmm. So it's for me when it becomes, that doesn't sound destructive. Plus, every single one of my friends who's religious, literally, you've discussed it. Besides the 7,000 rand, all of my Christian friends, all of my Muslim friends, all of my Buddhist friends, this is it. You know, and I don't intervene there. We can have, if I can't have an engaging conversation and ask you about your leader, your God, your practices, and like debate and argue a bit, if that's forbidden, if you've made it clear that I can't question, the friendship is going to be hectic, because I need access to that. Yeah. I want access to critical thinking and discussion and disagreement.
Okay. Yeah, so even if, and if we can discuss, but we agree to disagree because, you know, Keith Raniere is my God and he is all powerful and end of story.
I can live with that, because we'll just continue that forever. Like, that's fine as long as there's dialogue and it's active. Yeah. There wasn't dialogue. It was not allowed in Nexium. You weren't allowed to question.
That's
true. Long as we can debate and discuss, I'm happy, hey, with whatever religion or cult you're in.
So is there a place for cult-like organizations?
Yeah, definitely. I think people need them.
Oh, wow.
I actually think of all the cults, and when I say cults, I mean anything that could, Well, let's discuss cults. No, let's discuss cults, and I'm including religions. Mm. If those were all to stop today, there would be a lot of people without purpose and direction and the leadership they feel they need.
Mm.
And that matters. Like, people need to feel like they're in a purpose, even if it's one that is ultimately negative. Maybe they'll figure that out, maybe they won't. But I think that adds a lot. That's really important for people's identities.
Mm. To feel that sense of...
It is. And then even if it becomes your story of you've left the cult, you've left the group, and now you're healing, I mean, I think that's all part of your life story. I just don't think there's a right way to do life.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
What do you think? My belief is that the people who joined a cult, it shouldn't have been any other way. They joined and they left and they've learned from it, and their life has now... A lot of these people commit to, like, their healing and to helping other people leave cults or doing work around survivors, and that becomes their life. I don't see a problem with that. If I looked at that as a, you know, if I step back and look at that as someone's life, I don't see a problem. I don't think that's, unless they see it as a life deferred, which I think a lot of people do, but I don't think I believe in a life deferred. I think this was always going to, if it happened, it was kind of always going to happen. Mm. I believe, that's my belief system. I really believe that while there are, like, a multitude of choices in any given moment, what I did was what I could only ever do. Truly.
So, this is very interesting. Mm. And we're going to go down this hole a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So do you believe in free will?
That's a great question. So wait, by what I've said, does that mean there is no free will? That, like, you're kind of, what you were going to do, you were always going to do?
That there is, yes, that there is the illusion of free will, but it's not actual free will, because there was no other option for you, really.
Yeah.
Like, it's predetermined.
So that... yes, but it's not I guess so.
Guess so what?
I mean, I guess then I wouldn't use those words. I wouldn't say it's about free will or not free will.
Uh-huh.
I just wouldn't. But if I had to, then I would say yes, by your definition, yeah, I would say... But that doesn't mean don't make choices. I think I make a multitude of choices, but I don't believe I would have landed up anywhere else but here in South Africa, being a freelance voice of an artist and digital media entrepreneur.
Living with your best friend.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Just friend.
60% compatibility. As much as I wanted to be a singer and a dancer and an actress when I was a kid, as much as I wanted to be an actress when I was a teenager, as much as I went to school for film and I wanted to be a director and an actor and an actor's agent, this was always going to be.
Is life perfect?
Perfect. What does that mean?
It is the way it is. There is nothing to change about the way life is. It is complete. Doesn't mean that life isn't changing and growing. It means that whatever iteration it is complete, is perfect. There's nothing to change about it.
Yeah.
It's not wrong.
I can speak for myself and say, for me, I do as much as I want, as possible, as often as possible. And for me, that's perfect. Within my circumstances, I do as much as I want to do within the parameters, which are narrow.
Does that go, I mean, wow, does that stretch for things like helping me, I don't know, pot a plant to, these are things that never happen, to work situations? Like, is it from the smallest thing in this manifestation to the biggest?
Like, me or doing as much as I want?
Yes.
100%. But the what I want is short term, medium term, and long term. So short term, I want to have a burger for breakfast. I had whipped cream and fruits. I wanted to have that.
She should have said it the other way around. She had a fruit salad with whipped cream.
I don't know, I've had whipped cream topped with fruits.
Which is what it was.
And then I'll have a burger for second breakfast. That's within the parameters of what I want. Long term is...
A homemade burger, let me tell you.
A homemade burger.
It is amazing.
And then, like, long term is I'd like to buy a house. So for that reason, there might be things I forego short term for that. So I'm not always doing what I want short term, because if I did that, I wouldn't have my long term goals.
Correct.
Yeah, so I do forego, but it's all what I want.
Bitch. Okay, so now I've just had an epiphany.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday I was asking you a slew of questions around regret. And do you have regret? And if so, what does it look like in your life? And you couldn't really answer me, let's be honest. So my summary, although I was trying to listen, was that you don't have regret. Like, you don't live with the traditional definition of regret. And y'all can go look it up. You don't live with that. And my connection now is because of how you see the world. If how right now is the only way it could ever be, there's no need in wishing it to be another way because it was impossible. So you are where you're meant to be when you're meant to be, and you, and within that you do. And your responsibility is only to do what you want to do because that's the only way what's meant to be will be. But even if you didn't, it would still be. So if even if you didn't listen to yourself and you went and had coffee with that girl with the crazy eyes and she duped you, you were supposed to be duped.
Yeah. 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 I love that. That's exactly it.
That's exactly it. And because okay. And I live my life, just speaking plainly, with regret. There are so many what ifs, could ifs. I live with FOMO. I'm always thinking, I'm 34. Where should I be? Where should I have been by now? Why wasn't I married at 27? Why don't I have a booming business? Why am I not running my own agency? Why haven't I bought a house yet? Is it wrong that I haven't bought a house? Should I want to buy a house? Why am I this weight? If I had done things differently, would I have been smaller? Could I have stayed? My life is every single day, every moment is what ifs. Even when I get up to exercise, if I don't exercise, then how is that going to snowball and make a worse life for myself? I've just realized, like, it's all motivated by fear and FOMO. If I don't take up this opportunity, if I don't call that friend back, and that goes back to the friendship thing. If I don't make them my friend, if I don't hang out with them, if I don't reciprocate their affection for me, like, you know, all the things I could lose out on as opposed to accepting life right now, accepting the current reality, accepting the current manifestation of what life is. And if I did that and then lived within those parameters, I think, but here's that sentence, I think things would be very different. No. So, but do you know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah. So that's very exciting.
That's fantastic.
Is fascinating.
That's so interesting. And I think the big difference between me and you is you, and this is what plagues people who quote unquote can do anything.
Yeah.
You believe you can do anything and I don't. And so I have so fewer choices. When you believe you can do anything, nothing's enough because you could have been doing something better.
Oh my gosh.
And I don't believe I can do anything. So, like,
that's so funny. Do you know how many times Mukunda comes and asks me, do you think you could run faster than that person that we've seen on TV or whatever? Do you think you could do that better? Do you think you could jump higher? Do you think you could, if you, you know, did that financial whatever? There's so many scenarios that I objectively have no expertise in. I really believe
you can do it.
I can do it.
And that's a play. And with, from childhood, it's I think it's meant so positively that we're encouraged we can do everything or anything. And that's so overwhelming because even if we wanted to do everything, we don't have the time to. We, unfortunately, when you do everything, you kind of do nothing. If you're looking at success in a very like linear and like typical way, in a way that society rewards, you just kind of can't. And I think there's a difference, like, you can't do all of us listening, me, you, you can't do everything, mostly because you don't have the interest in doing everything. So if I really believed I could go swimming, rock climbing, bungee jumping, scuba diving, mountaineering, running, I would do none of that stuff because I can do all of it, I believe. But I actually don't have the interest in any of that besides scuba diving. So if I know what I like, my life is much more streamlined because I can do what I like because I know what I like and I pay attention to only what I like. But if you think you can do anything, you're swayed so much by the prospect of doing anything, you might end up doing nothing.
Hey, poster child.
And it's like, what? I don't know. I don't know that that's true. But
to a large extent it is. I really feel like anyway.
We'll have to really look at that practically.
Yeah, we'll look at that.
I don't know that's true. And believing that you can amount to any more than you are now in a different field is torturous because there's always higher. Elon Musk is not stopping. There's more he could do.
No, he's going to Mars.
That's how he feels. Beyonce's not stopping. There's more she could do. I think she's probably chilling right now. But like, that's a curse. To really believe you could be more than this is a curse because you're consistently unhappy because you'll never, ever reach it. And when you do, the goal changes because you never thought you'd be making as much money as you do as a voiceover artist.
Correct.
And you couldn't have even dreamed of being here. Now that you're here, it's more. It's like, oh, but I don't even have an agency. What the hell? When you get an agency, it's what? I'm not even on the Fortune 500 or on the JSE. So I just think I'm really trying to lean into the mundaneness and smallness of my life from the outside, that I am going to, there's a chance I will live and die as a voiceover artist, making money on Fiverr and Upwork, enjoying my life in Johannesburg with my animals, traveling occasionally, eating good food, making enough money that I can like have nice furniture, and that's it. And my life may not make a splash. I might live and die with no one knowing my name beyond people who love me, and that's okay. But if you, if there's a thing that, you know, I should be doing more with my life because your family encourages you to, because family thinks you have a limitless potential, you're especially your mom and dad or your parents, and they encourage us to, but that's so damaging to believe you could be bigger than. Like, just think you can't. How about think you can't? Because then you'll really enjoy where you are now. And there's nothing, there's so much joy and honor and pride in enjoying the life you have in its smallness or bigness as it is now, than wanting, like, haven't you heard, like, boys do that a lot? Like, SoundCloud rappers are like, yeah, I'm going to own a jet and a plane one day. And I'm going, and it's like, why torture yourself? Why not just be a SoundCloud rapper? Why ever think you'll be Ja Rule? Like, why would you ever do that to yourself?
Ja Rule. That's my input.
Ja Rule. She was such a weirdo. And she did a big thing. You did a, like, a, she a pantomimed him. Mimicked him.
That is, I think that is the most fantastic note to end on. And should, yeah, a we'll great segue this. Into, yes, next week we're going to be talking about happiness.
I love that.
Yeah. This I is a that. Fantastic a fantastic lead in into that. Thank you so much for sharing that and for being here for this conversation. I think I'm feeling emotional now.
Oh, thank you, darling. Mm. Let's go make burgers.
Let's go make burgers.
Thank you. This was wonderful. If you enjoyed this episode, which I know you did, this was then literally our best episode. Hit us, bitches. Oh, well done.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Send some money in if you can afford to.
Yes. And if you can't send us love.
Yeah, send us love.
But if you can send us money.
If you do want to design our logo, shit. Actually,
yeah.
send us your work and then we'll inquire about prices if we like it.
Oh my gosh, just, that would be so nice. That would be really lovely. Yes.
You can send it to the I Said What I Said Instagram or you can email.
Mm-hmm.
Please not our personal DMs. I Said What I Said only, just so we can keep track.
Yeah.
Right. Stay blessed. Stay well. Love to hear your feedback on this episode. Mm. I think I'll put a couple of threads on the Facebook group. And yeah, stay moisturized and moist.
Bye.
Okay, goodbye.